go, go. That's the birthday. That's the birthday. We're doing a show. There's no birthday. We're doing a show. There's no birthday. 9 reasons you can blame the recession on fibromyalgia. Really? That's the title that you put up?
You know, a lot of people don't know that the recession is still going on.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. This is the most misleading title we've ever done, except we are going to talk about fibromyalgia. But, like, it's amazing. You know, so these two, about a minute before the show goes live, we are scrambling to do all this checklist that we don't have because we're idiots. We actually don't even have a checklist for the show. So it's like, turn off the air conditioning, make sure Logan hits record, and then write a title and description for the show. And so we decided today, we're like, oh, we don't have, we're going to talk about fibromyalgia. Okay, what's provocative? You know what, Logan, go to clickbaitgenerator.com. And he did. And one of the generated clickbaits was 7 things Lady Gaga has in common with fibromyalgia. And I thought that was ironic because there was just a documentary on Netflix, 5'2", about Lady Gaga's fibromyalgia. And we watched it today and we did a reaction video that we're going to post tomorrow. So I thought it would make a lot of sense if we did a Tribe Teach today and talked about fibromyalgia. So what did Logan do? He picked the article, the clickbait title that says the recession, the 9 things the recession has in common or blame on for fibromyalgia, which strangely makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I'm betting you that chronic pain, chronic disease, which affects 1 in 10 Americans, and there are somewhere between 6 and 8 million Americans with fibromyalgia, of which about 80 to 90% are women. Like, that's a huge drain on the economy for an imaginary disease that doesn't exist.
How dare you? Okay, fibromyalgia is super politically charged, so, and we're going to be taking your questions and comments during. So if you have a question or comment, since it is so politically charged, we're going to put up Mini-Trump here.
Mini-Trump!
He's asking a question and...
Z, why is it the wall built?
The wall isn't built because most of the workers who are trying to build the wall have fibromyalgia and are addicted to crack.
Good answer.
Speaking of which, I made a joke just now about fibromyalgia being a fake, made-up disease. Am I joking, Tom Heineberg, or am I serious? And why would I even bring that up?
Well, what I learned from watching the Lady Gaga documentary...
Which is great, by the way.
Yeah, which is great. And we did a piece on it, and we're going to put it out tomorrow. It actually is a really good documentary. I was like, damn, Gaga is so brave. Anyway, what I learned about it is that there is nothing you can test for in fibromyalgia. You have to assume the patient is telling you the truth, that they're not seeking drugs, and that they're not being crazy or making it all up for attention.
You learned something?
I learned that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Baby, I've got fibro, and I'm on a lot of Percos. Fibro, fibromyalgia. I've got chronic pain, and I'm telling you, it's not in my brain. This is exactly right. So the reason fibromyalgia is so charged and controversial is that it is a condition that was, it was described as early as the 19th century. But the tricky part is it's a condition with absolutely few physical and diagnostic findings that would actually make you believe someone is actually ill, even though it's real. So, for example, laboratory tests are often normal. Imaging is often normal. The physical findings are limited really to sort of tender trigger points in specific sort of patterns. But other than that, someone can complain of feeling like they've been hit by a truck, that they hurt all over, that they have horrible headaches, that they don't sleep, that they'll sleep for 8 hours, but still wake up feeling like they've been hit by a train. And since it's often, you know, 80 to 90% women, there's a component of women have to make a lot of noise to be heard in this society, as it is, and historically even worse. And so you combine all those things, and basically the medical industrial complex, and a lot of people are like, well, it's all in their head, and it's total, it's not a real, it's a bullshit disease. And nothing could actually be further from the truth. And I have to be honest, I was one of those docs early in my training, because you'd see a patient with fibromyalgia, they'd have a diffusely, what we call a diffusely positive, pan-positive review of systems. It means every question you ask them, they say, yeah, I got, yeah, that hurts. Yeah, huh? Yeah. And they're allergic to everything. They don't tolerate any medications. And they're often on a lot of different medications and they're still complaining of pain. They're often just sort of depressed and anxious. And you would just think, well, this person is just crazy. And that was the untrained sort of response. And I say this to be entirely transparent, that there are still a lot of clinicians who feel this way. That this couldn't be further from the truth. And it does people who suffer with fibromyalgia a huge disservice, because we're going to go through what it is, how it's real, and how it's so difficult to treat, but we have to recognize it. And I'm glad that Gaga came out and said that she has it, because now it's going to raise the awareness of this disease.
Question.
Yes, Mini Trump.
Why is it all women?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. And it's not all women. And in fact, there's some thought that it's actually underdiagnosed in men, because men just are like, it hurts and stuff. Whereas women are a little more in tune with what they're experiencing. It's hard to know. But increasingly, you're diagnosing it in younger people and in men. So it might just be a diagnostic issue. Hmm. Yeah. Any comments before we go into it? What do we got?
Let's see.
I wonder how many people with fibromyalgia, says Krista Gruber, actually have critically low vitamin D levels. Is that something that is checked with a fibromyalgia workup? Krista, we're jumping the gun a bit, but yes, they have looked at vitamin D in fibromyalgia. It's still very controversial. There's not clear evidence that low vitamin D levels are either purely correlated or causative of fibromyalgia. So that's probably a good way.
Yeah. Brittany Eckelbarger says, I'm pretty sure the diagnosis is just being an adult. That's a question from Trump. So I think this is, I think it was Freud who coined the term ordinary misery. How do you distinguish suffering from ordinary misery? Mm. And is fibromyalgia just ordinary misery and some people can't cope with life?
Ooh, what a great question. And honestly, this is at the heart of the stigma around fibromyalgia, is a suck it up deficiency. Is it a suck it up deficiency in people who ought to be sucking it up? And the answer clearly, when you look at the data, is no. They have different brain chemistry. They have different findings. They have different ways that their brains process pain and central sensitization. And since we're getting a clearer understanding of that through imaging modalities and other testing, we're starting to see, no, this is a real thing, guys. And it may be that there's a genetic, in fact, we'll get through all this, but actually let's do it now. There may be a genetic component. There are a lot of genes that are associated with it. There is a hereditary family pattern to it. If you look at brain imaging, you see changes in sort of the way pain processing centers and other things function in people with fibromyalgia and people without it. You can see actually peripheral changes in certain nerve fibers. What you don't see are things like inflammation. You don't see the signs of an inflammatory process. It used to, in the early days, used to be called fibrositis, which implies inflammation, and they never found inflammation. So they changed the name to fibromyalgia, myalgia meaning pain in the muscles. And that's a more descriptive term. It's considered a functional disease, meaning you don't see specifically pathologic changes in the tissues and stuff beyond what I just described. And so as a result, there's something else going on, and it's felt increasingly to be in the brain, there is a processing of peripheral nerve input that is different than in a normal person. And that means that you have a lower threshold for pain, particularly very stereotypic pain. There's an increased disruption in sleep. So people have very fitful sleep, very poor sleep, and they wake up unrefreshed and feeling bad. They often have associated headaches, temporomandibular pain in the joints here, and a particular pattern of pain, which we'll talk about. And in addition to that, there's often psychiatric comorbidity, meaning they have depression and anxiety, and it's unclear whether that is co-causative of this disease or whether they're depressed and anxious because they have a disease that no one can understand that causes them misery and suffering and that people say is fake.
Amber Moore says, the ones that claim this, like my ex-mother-in-law, uses this as an excuse for anything she didn't want to do. I'm a total skeptic. But then Teresa says, unless you live with fibromyalgia each and every day, you have no idea what it feels like and how it robs you of a normal life. So is this one of those diseases that's real and in the future we're going to have more information and be able to really quantify it? Or is it total fakery bullshit from whiny losers?
Yeah. Yes and yes, and all of the above are good questions. Here's some answers. So they actually did a study, and this gets to the question of, are people who claim to have fibromyalgia. And by the way, it is a subjective disease, but it's also something that you can examine for and you can meet criteria to have. And we'll talk about those. In the 10 years prior to the diagnosis of fibromyalgia being made with these patients, they often had symptoms. Oftentimes, the minimum symptom range is 3 months to have a diagnosis of it, but often it's years of this stuff.
And often in people with a history of some trauma, PTSD, et cetera, that then again clouds the picture. But it is a genetic disease that's triggered by environment nobody really knows. So in the 10 years prior, they rack up big healthcare bills. So a lot of sort of sick behavior, going to hospitals, ERs, trying to find answers. After the diagnosis is made, the study then followed them out and found that the healthcare expenditures dropped because they had a diagnosis and they were like, okay, now I know what I have and I know that there are certain things I can do and other things that aren't going to help, and they are getting help. And you would think that if you get the diagnosis, if you're looking for attention, your expenditures and your attention-seeking behavior would increase after the diagnosis, and it's not at all clear that that's what they're seeing.
Ted Rico, I think that's how you say that, he says, my I think wife was diagnosed with fibromyalgia years ago, and she has severe tightness in the trapezoids that will not go away, and has this weird numb feeling, like it's wet on the side of her face, down a third of her chin. This was in the Gaga documentary, like basically the same thing. Is there a correlation between fibromyalgia and tight trapezoid muscles?
Yes, and yes. So let's go through the actual clinical manifestations of this, okay? So fibromyalgia, you get this sort of widespread musculoskeletal pain and fatigue. That's the most common sort of basket of symptoms. And it's often accompanied by other somatic symptoms, meaning symptoms of the body, that, as well as cognitive and psychiatric disturbances. So depression, anxiety, by cognitive, what they're talking about is what they call the fibro fog. So it is a sort of a reasonably well-defined characteristic of inability to pay attention and inability to rapidly move your attention from thought process to task to task to task. And it's colloquially called the fibro fog. So this is the sort of general constellation. And then as you get into it, and often it can coexist with other things like irritable bowel syndrome, migraine, other so-called functional disorders, which again speaks to, is there a genetic component? Is there also an environmental stress, trauma? We talked about adverse childhood events with Dr. Harry. Is it less of what's wrong with you than what happened to you that then triggered this cascade of events that led to this fibromyalgia diagnosis? So the musculoskeletal pain is often in the neck and shoulders, like the common or the trapezius. It can be localized there, but it can be also all over, and it's above and below the waist. You can see that the most common complaint is, I feel like I hurt all over. It feels like I always have the flu. They describe that the pain is present throughout the muscles, but often that the joints hurt. And sometimes they describe joint swelling, although you won't see it on examination. So it's a sensation that the joints are swollen. They describe a fatigue, and that's almost a universal symptom, just like this sort of widespread musculoskeletal pain. So it's most notable when you get up from sleep. You just can't get out of bed, and it's also really bad in mid-afternoon for many people. So even minor activities can aggravate this pain and fatigue, and prolonged activities make it really worse. And one of the most common things, again, is waking up feeling unrefreshed. Like, man, I got 9-10 hours of sleep, and I still feel like shit. The cognitive disturbances we talked about, psychiatric stuff, the depression and anxiety in 30 to 50% of patients at the time of diagnosis. Now, the question is chicken and the egg. Is having this undiagnosed fibromyalgia with all these symptoms causing depression and anxiety? Or is depression and anxiety part of the neurochemistry of someone who develops fibromyalgia? Do they come together? And do they feed on each other?
Quickly, Z, I think Lauren has a really good question, which is, as an occupational therapist, I don't know how to help patients reach goals when the pain waxes and wanes. Thoughts on inpatient rehab and how to tackle this as a clinician? So what would you do in her situation?
So rehab is a key part of the treatment protocol of this. And again, we're jumping back and forth, but just to answer this question, there is no magic answer, especially when symptoms do come and go. When you watch the Gaga documentary, you'll see her struggle. She's on tour, she's having pain, she broke her hip. Then she'll go into spasm, she'll have massage therapy, she'll get trigger injections, she's on medications. So it's a multidisciplinary, multi-pronged approach. So the occupational therapist is a key part of it, but not the sole part of it. So it might be that there's a longer term solution that also includes certain medications, which we'll talk about. So gentle aerobic activity, some resistance training, these are important components of the rehabilitation. And actually a physiatrist or PM&R doc can be a key referral that you make for patients who fail the simple first line therapy and recommendations for fibro. So going back to the sort of, so that's a great question, and I'm glad it was asked. The psychiatric symptoms we talked about, the headaches, more than 50% of people have migraine and tension type headaches that can sometimes even lead to, you know, physical disability. And we've all seen these patients. And again, listen, guys, I hear the commenters who are like, this is bullshit. It's patients who are trying to get attention. They're the hardest patients to deal with. I don't get it. I was there with you as a hospitalist. I was there with you working in the ER. I was there with you in the clinic. I feel the pain of it. And I think part of the pain comes from we're seeing a constellation of symptoms that doesn't have a magic answer, that is real, but feels like it's not because we're dealing with someone that's so anxious and so upset that it's easy just to pin it all on that, but it is not that. And increasingly, the pathophysiology bears that out. So
it seems like women also tend to get more muscle knots, muscle tightness, muscle spasms than men do.
That's because they're busy backhand slapping us constantly, which we deserve. You know, I mean, and again, it may just be that they're reporting it more, that there's a stigma with men reporting these kind of symptoms. It's hard to say.
Can I tell you a personal anecdote? When I was 18 or 19, I got pretty depressed for a period of 6 to 8 months. Mm. So, I mean, it was pretty severe. I didn't see anybody about it or anything, but I was definitely depressed. And I was never diagnosed with fibromyalgia or anything, but I was waking up every day with just this intense tightness in my neck. And I was always writing it off on this or that, you know, like, oh, I worked out hard the other day and my neck's just sore, whatever, you know. I became not depressed anymore. I cured my depression, and I have not had a single neck issue since.
So I have actually, and this is a serious thing, I have a serious diagnosis for that, and that's you're a whiny little bitch, and someone should have slapped you. That's really what I think, because no man should complain of, oh my God, I'm depressed and I have neck pain. No, and if you think I'm serious, you're watching the wrong show. That's exactly, actually, and I've had similar symptoms. The body and the mind are deeply connected. Pain is a mental sensation, and you can have thresholds for it. And actually, the inputs from the nerves to the brain are modulated. There's substance P, there's dampening circuits that dampen pain, and the thought is, and looking at the data now, I'm convinced, and any doubt that I had that fibromyalgia was a real thing has been erased. Because those pathways are abnormal in these patients. Now, whether they're abnormal because of a mind-body feedback loop, it doesn't matter. The net result is you have an abnormal processing of pain that's causing human suffering. And if we're not compassionate to it, even though it comes with a lot of other baggage, If we don't treat the whole person, we're failing in our role as healers to make suffering less. So I'm increasingly convinced. You'd asked about numbness and tingling earlier, and the medical term for that is paresthesia. And yes, it's one of the most common symptoms in fibromyalgia. So people who say that I'm numb, I'm tingling, I feel like there's pins and needles. And Gaga talks about it in her documentary. So there's a lot of other symptoms that can go with it, you know, vaginal pain, dysmenorrhea, sexual dysfunction, multiple allergies. How many times have we heard that, right? The patient comes in with an allergy list this big and your diagnosis is, I don't think you need internal medicine, I think you need psychiatry.
Right.
Because you're crazy.
Yeah.
But the truth is, no, they may have something like a fibromyalgia where they just have multiple sensitivities.
But then what happens then when that person is allergic to everything but de la la?
Yeah, you know, then they're just full of shit and need to be stopped.
That leads into Candy says, long-term ER girl, and you see people who are clearly appear sick with this and realize something is indeed wrong with them, and then you see others who appear to use it as a crutch.
Yeah.
Clear criteria to differentiate would be helpful to debunk the myths and move forward.
What a great segue. So yeah, it's easy to say you have fibromyalgia, but you can actually kind of look around for it. And here, and now you can fake some of these things, but the truth is it's harder to do. There are physical findings, and one of the ones that's most usually found is this tenderness in soft tissue areas. And they're fairly typical. And there was a figure, actually, that I wanted to give you that I forgot to give you. So you were going to replace it with a meme, I think, because to you, figures are memes.
And now we have Tiny Trump.
That's Tiny Trump. Yeah. So instead of my figure showing all the different trigger points, you're going to show somebody who triggers 50% of the country.
Yeah, he triggers.
Yeah.
He's a trigger point for a lot of people.
I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty sure Donald Trump is a trigger point for at least 50% of the country. So that all being said, the way that you can look at this is you can examine patients, and the way you examine is you push on these points with enough force, and actually they actually diagnose it's a 4 kilograms per centimeter. They actually quantify the amount of force you have to push. An easier way to remember it is enough force that it turns your nail bed white. So when you're examining, you push enough that it whitens, it blanches your nail bed, and you push on these points. So or under the lower sternocleidomastoid muscle, near the costochondral junction, and this is where people hurt, and you can push and reproduce pain. But if you try pushing at the forehead, the back of the thumb, they don't have pain. Now, someone who's faking it may have pain everywhere you push, in which case they want that dilaw law. If you look, there's other spots at the hips, distal to the lateral epicondyle, so right at the tennis elbow, people often have pain. The origin of the supraspinatus muscle in the mid-back and in the trapezius, right at the base of the skull, and at the lower quadrant right above the back, the lateral part of the knee. You jam on those spots, people with fibromyalgia have pretty typical reproducible pain a lot of the time on both sides of their body. So this is a thing you can actually evaluate. The other part of the evaluation is rule out shit that could be happening that could mimic this. Rheumatoid arthritis, osteoarthritis, other autoimmune diseases. Do a complete blood count. Do a CRP, a C-reactive protein, to see is there inflammation. In pure fibro, there often isn't inflammation, because it is not an inflammatory condition. It is a most likely a problem of central brain pain sensitization. And therefore, you treat it with sort of, a lot of times, with brain agents. So, and we're gonna talk about that. So do the test, make sure you've ruled other stuff out. It's really a clinical diagnosis, meaning you have to talk to the patient, get a history, look at them, evaluate them, examine them, and then do some tests to rule out the other bad stuff. And you may find that they have anxiety, post-traumatic stress, chronic fatigue syndromes, other things that go with that. And then you do that physical exam, especially the pushing on the trigger points. Now, in terms of lab evaluation, what they'll recommend typically is a complete blood count, a sedimentation rate, ESR, to see what, is there inflammation, and a CRP, like we talked about. ANA and rheumatoid factor, these other things, only if you suspect they might have a sort of an inflammatory arthritis, like rheumatoid or something like that. And then in if you're worried about thyroid disease, which can contribute, and I think Gaga had this actually, you want to test thyroid, make sure they don't have hypothyroidism. And then again, they say low vitamin D levels, getting back to the earlier comment we have, are common in patients with chronic pain across the board. And it's unclear that it's causative. You may just see that it's associated. So that being said, what, and we talked about what could cause it. We talked about brain issues, genetic issues, altered pain processing. So patients with fibromyalgia have been studied at length. They have a different way that they sum painful stimuli. It's called temporal summation of pain. They do it very differently than patients without this. They have decreased internal pain inhibition. So we normally have endogenous opioids that are made by our body. They have less of them. Their opioid receptors are abnormal. So they have high peripheral opioid receptors, but less in the brain. So could that change how they respond to pain? And then they've looked at functional MRI, and they've seen real significant differences in these patients. So I could go on and on. The truth is, it's increasingly clear with our sophisticated technology that we will one day be able to actually objectively diagnose this disease instead of having it be a clinical subjective diagnosis. And I think that will take away a lot of the stigma with this.
Hey, Z, before we get into this, a lot of people are asking about weed, because every time there's a new disease, we have to say, hey, bro, does weed cure this disease, bro? Does it? Does it?
No. Weed doesn't do shit for fibromyalgia in any of the studies that have looked at it, and albeit they're limited, so we need better studies. But it, the only thing they found is it might help fibro patients sleep a little bit better, but it does not help with the pain, it doesn't help with the symptoms, and all it does is make you high as fuck, and probably if you overdo it, you end up with this cyclic vomiting syndrome we've talked about in another episode. Oh, look, guys, I love marijuana as much as the next stoner, but it is not a cure-all for these diseases. If it helps you, great, use it, we should study it, that's wonderful, but don't throw it out there as a cure for everything, because it's just horseshit.
Yeah, and stop all acting like it's a magic plant, all right? Puff the magic dragon. America.
Lived by the sea and frolicked in. Okay, speaking
of which. By the way, Gaga smoked a joint. She, when she had an attack from fibromyalgia, she said, what was the first thing she said? She said, I need a joint. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't think that helped Gaga, except maybe to write her next track. Because Alejandro was clearly written when she was high AF. Sleep abnormalities. So one thing is, the sleep abnormalities are so weird that you definitely want to evaluate for sleep apnea. Because one of the things you can rule out is, well, if they have obstructive sleep apnea, then that can explain why they're not sleeping, why they're tired all day, why they feel like they've been hit by a truck. Often can be related to pain, anxiety, depression. So make sure to rule that out if that's a concern when you're working up a fibromyalgia patient. They've also found some neurohormonal changes in these patients. So their corticotropin-releasing factor is abnormal. Their cortisol levels on wakening are weird compared with controls. So there's a lot of hormonal, neural changes. So this is legit, guys.
Hey, Z, real quick. Jen says, I have end-stage fibro and am immune to morphine. Are there different stages of fibro?
You're not immune to morphine. You have treatment-resistant fibromyalgia. And by the way, opioids are not considered an appropriate treatment long-term for fibromyalgia. And we're going to talk about treatments. So if you're on long-term chronic opioids for fibromyalgia, I'm going to go on record right now and say you need to figure out a way to get off those, because they are not going to treat the central sensitization that is the heart and soul of this. And the guideline recommendations, there's actually data that shows that opioids make this worse, with the exception of tramadol, which is a partial opioid agonist and partial norepinephrine and serotonin reuptake inhibitor. That drug in combination with Tylenol has shown promise in certain trials in people who fail sort of first-line approaches. So it's very hard. You can have treatment-resistant fibromyalgia, and then you have to go down a different pathway of treatment. And that usually means a rheumatologist, a physiatrist, a psychiatrist, a neuropsychiatrist, referrals of people who treat a lot of fibromyalgia who can help you.
Also, which, I have to say I done got trolled because I think Jen was being sarcastic.
Oh. But this is what happens when you put mini-Trump on the thing, man. You're going to attract them trolls, though.
Question. Why isn't the wall built yet?
Yeah. Because all the immigrant labor that we were going to use to build the wall, all of them are complaining of fibromyalgia.
Communist lies.
Should we talk about treatment?
Yeah, let's talk about treatment.
Let's do that. Do you want to read any more comments?
No.
Okay,
you
fine.
People trolled me once, shame on you. Troll me twice, can't get trolled again.
W said that.
I believe W did say that. Let's get into the actual treatment of this. So I want to pull up the piece on that because I lost it here and I don't want to tell you guys lies. All right. So the initial treatment for fibromyalgia, it's very important to educate the patient. This is what this disease is. This is not all in your head, although there's a brain origin of this. You are especially sensitive at lower threshold for pain. Your symptoms are real. I'm glad we've diagnosed this. We're going to help you get through it, and it's going to involve a lot of work on all our parts, but we're going to do our best we can to make you feel better and to help you function in life. And what are your goals, and what would you like to, you know, what level of functionality would you like to get back to, and so on. And then you really want to think about an exercise program right away. So something that's going to work with them, aerobic conditioning, stretching, water exercise has been shown to be beneficial, swim-based therapies, things that people can tolerate. And remembering that if this is a functional disease, there's a lot of pain, but the physical effects of the pain aren't really there. So you can push a little bit. And yes, you'll have pain, but you're not going to injure your joints. You're not going to hurt your muscles, right? And that's important to reassure patients, although it's also important to listen when you're getting extra pain, because, again, this could be a real issue. I mean, real meaning a local physical issue in the muscle. It's different from the fibro. You want to talk about sleep hygiene. You want to talk about treating the comorbidities, the mood disorders, the depression, the anxiety, and if there's sleep disorder, if they need sleep apnea treatment. And then you can consider drug therapy. And when the non-drug therapy stuff has failed, then you start to think about, okay, what do we do? And the basic armamentarium for this consists of the SSRI medications, so selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, the things like sertraline and
Wellbutrin, Zoloft, Paxil,
Prop.
Those, but although those are not the typical agents you use, and we'll pull up the exact agents, but tricyclic antidepressants as well, like Elavil, and you can often give those at night because they help you sleep, and that will help with the sleep disorder. Anticonvulsants such as gabapentin and pregabalin, so Lyrica and Neurontin, are agents often used in this, along with the exercise program. And I'm going to go through some of the stuff because they've actually studied some of it. So, you know, again, Prozac we talked about, amitriptyline, which is Elavil, pregabalin, which is Lyrica, and things like Cymbalta are often helpful in this disease, and venlafaxine, which is Effexor. So these are antidepressants. So what's going on? You're trying to affect the central pathways that might be abnormal in these patients, and if those fail, you often will do combination therapy of different drugs together, like Elavil in the evening, which is that tricyclic, and an SSRI in the morning. The SSRI might wake you up a bit and get you out of bed, and the Elavil might help put you to sleep so you get better sleep. So you try to do these cocktails in conjunction with someone who really knows what they're doing. And full disclosure, You know, I manage patients with fibromyalgia. I don't specifically treat fibromyalgia myself, but I see it treated quite a bit in my rheumatology colleagues and in my hospitalized patients. So I'm often continuing those therapies and modifying those therapies. But you need to see a specialist who treats a lot of fibromyalgia if you have particularly resistant fibromyalgia.
What kind of specialist is that? Because Nicole says, what type of physician would you recommend, because her PCP isn't cutting it for her fibromyalgia?
Right. You start with a PCP, and you want to get a good one. And when that's not enough, the PCP should be the first to recognize, okay, is it a rheumatologist who treats a lot of fibromyalgia? And the rheumatologists are great because they can put you on different regimens, and they know when to go, you know what, it's time to see the physiatrist, the PM&R doc, like Dr. Kathy Travnicek, who's often on our show, who can get you moving with gentle motion, exercises, et cetera. Do you need to see a psychiatrist to co-treat the mood disorders and also understand what the interactions are between your antidepressants and the other antidepressants we're giving you for the fibro? So do you need to see a neuropsychiatrist? Is there something else going on there? Do you need to see a meditation instructor or a biofeedback person?
Yeah, I was going to ask, what do you think about, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness, that kind of thing for treating this?
Pain woe.
And how do you personally deal with pain? When you have a pain in your body, I know you don't take opioids or NSAIDs or anything. So what do? You white knuckle it, or you try to be mindful?
I smoke crack. That helps, because then I'm just like, Ashley Larry, bitch. No, what I typically do, and it depends, is I try to get at the heart of what is the pain caused by. Once I think it's just a functional pain or something that's going to get better, then I use meditation, actually. So I'm able to actually accept the presence of the pain without adding a judgment or a label to it, and that allows me to let it go. In other words, you can have pain without suffering, and they're distinct. Suffering is the psychological overlay of, oh my God, this hurts, and I'm gonna die, or I'm ruined, or I'm not gonna be able to do stuff, or I'm worried about the future. Or, you know, like Gaga said in her video, am I gonna get pregnant ever with this hip pain? Am I ever gonna be able to have a baby? Am I gonna be able to do this when I'm old? My rock star lifestyle. And so if you let go of the suffering component of it, and you accept that, oh, this is pain, and it's a kind of an energy, and you accept it, it's very hard to do. And it takes a lot of practice and rewiring of your brain through meditation. So that actually gets me to it. So you've got the antidepressants, the medications. If those fail, you can do a combination of Tylenol round the clock with tramadol. And that's been studied and has some benefit. So the partial opioid agonist with the tramadol, which again can have an addictive component, but it's not as bad as the other narcotics. And it has this SSRI component, norepinephrine uptake inhibitor component as well, reuptake inhibitor component as well, that seems to help in the combination with Tylenol. So that's another combo.
Question, tramadol is lame because it barely gets you high, bro.
Bingo. Am I right, Mini Trump?
No.
Where is he? Here he is. Hi, Mini Trump, I love you. The other referral you can make is to pain management. So a multidisciplinary pain center that isn't just going to throw opioids at you is probably a good answer. Again, I said before, pure opioids are not a good treatment for fibromyalgia. They have been studied, they do not work, and they may make things worse. So I don't want to hear from a lot of people who are like, it's the only thing that helps me. It means that you haven't found the right answer yet. And I'm going to get hate mail and hate mail and hate mail. And sometimes you need it for breakthrough. And some people are so dependent on it that they have to have it. But honestly, if you can avoid getting hooked on those for fibro, you're going to be better off. Physical therapy. Now, you mentioned cognitive behavioral therapy. Absolutely. So it has been studied. It is cost effective. It's more cost effective than the combination of Tylenol and Tramadol. And it does work. So sending someone to a good CBT therapist, multidisciplinary programs that put everything under one roof, including the therapy, the PM&R, the physical med and occupational med, and the medication management all under one roof, have been shown to be very helpful. And then it turns out people who often fail this stuff end up going down the path to woo. And they will seek out acupuncture and Reiki and cupping. And we saw some of this in the Gaga video. And it's been looked at, a lot of the stuff, including homeopathy. None of that shit works. And it's funny because they looked at acupuncture and they go, oh my God, it works. Oh my God, sham acupuncture works just as good, where you don't even put the needles all the way in. Oh my God, acupuncture is a placebo, which I've been saying from the beginning. Doesn't mean placebo isn't awesome. Doesn't mean your acupuncturist doesn't care about you. Doesn't mean you might not benefit from a really strong placebo, but it is a fucking placebo. Just understand that. What isn't a placebo, from what we've seen so far in the trials, is meditation, a particular type of awareness meditation, has shown to help. Yoga, a particular type of yoga, and Tai Chi. So remember our video we did, Hippies, where I talked about mind-body medicine? These are the modalities in mind-body medicine that have been shown to help with patients with fibromyalgia, with sleep, with pain, with functionality, with fatigue. And again, is this surprising? Meditation, Tai Chi, which is a kind of a movement meditation.
I'll tell you why it's not surprising, see? Because you know who did Tai Chi? Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse. That's right. And he would have kicked fibromyalgia's ass.
He would have ripped it a new one before he died of pancreatic cancer. He really would have. I love Patrick Swayze, by the way. We should, you know what? We should do a real doctor watches Roadhouse. And I'll just watch the whole thing.
It has no medical benefit.
Zero.
We're not going to do that.
Zero. Zero. Take my breath away. Different movie, but it's a kind of movement meditation, Tai Chi. Yoga is the same thing. It's a movement-based meditation. So in the process of feeling your body, you rewire your brain. And advanced meditators have shown this in fMRI. They literally grow new neurons, new connections. Could that affect a central sensitization of pain? Absolutely. Could it affect the difference between perception of pain and suffering? Absolutely. So to my fibros out there, like, make sure you explore this. And don't just give it lip service. Meditation is hard. It takes work. It's the easiest thing in the world to do, but it actually takes practice and work, which means you have to commit to it and you have to do it. Find a good teacher, find a good yoga teacher, Tai Chi teacher, meditation teacher, and do it.
Chris Bentley says, I disagree you saying it's linked to depression. I think the unrelenting pain and insomnia with an invisible illness would lead to depression, not the other way around. But hey, you're a doctor and I'm only a nurse.
Who is that? What's his name?
Chris. It's a she.
It's a she. Chris, I in fact said that exact thing earlier in the show, so I'm sorry if you missed that part of the show. I said it's unclear whether the depression is caused by the fibromyalgia itself having this horrible disease or whether depression is linked to it. So we don't disagree. We actually agree. Other comments?
Rebecca says, I'm a licensed professional counselor with fibro. My concern with Tylenol would be liver damage. Opioids mask the pain and make you have kickback pain. CBT and mindfulness are effective if used daily, but the pain never completely goes away. Accepting that, it's always going to be there, and fighting flare-ups is key.
She basically said it. She nailed it. I mean, and she suffers with this disease. So the truth is, though, chronic Tylenol exposure is a danger for liver and kidney, but when you do it appropriately with certain limits per day, you can pull it off. I agree about opioids being a bad idea, and you're right. You have to accept that you're never going to be fully pain-free, but how you perceive pain and your cognitive response to it is a key component of the suffering element of fibromyalgia. And any chronic pain, any disease, cancer, anything like that, it's how we perceive it because, again, pain is a perception. And it's real to the person perceiving it. So how you perceive it is under your control. It's just hard. It's hard to modulate, and it takes practice and instruction a lot of the time.
You know, I think I understand why it's like dudes aren't coming forward with their fibromyalgia. Because I have chronic pain. I have back pain every day of my life, and I have flare-ups. But if you ask me if I have chronic pain, I'd be like, I have chronic pain. Whatever, bro.
That's true, actually. Yeah. Like,
I mean, my back hurts and shit, but whatever.
Like, I've walked, Tom and I have been editing video, and he literally is lying on the ground. I'm like, why are you lying on the ground? Ah, you know, it's a back thing. Don't worry about it. Anyways, hey, Logan, fuck you. Fix that cut. And he literally like, I just got a steroid injection 5 minutes ago because my back's fucked up. But, you know, fuck it all. That's literally, so, you know, that doesn't mean that's the answer, okay? That may be the answer for Tom. He gets through his day. He's still quite productive. He's still an asshole. Nothing's changed. But it's not how everybody deals with pain. And the question is there a way that we can find some acceptance and modulate our levels of suffering? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I would never talk like this. I would never be like, I am a chronic pain warrior, okay? So you don't know what my life is like. Only God can judge me, okay? And judges. In court, in Trump.
I still want to do a Tupac song. Only God can judge me now, because that's just dope.
Let's see. Other comments? Jennifer says, can having fibro cause you to be susceptible to other diseases / conditions in the future? If my current treatment isn't working, is it safe to just suffer, or am I hurting myself in the long run?
Jennifer, nobody knows the answer to this beyond some preliminary data on brain scans that's very, very, very early, and it looked at the fact that people with fibro tend to have shrinkage of the brain of the gray matter at a faster rate. So the question is that because of the fibromyalgia or is it because of the chronic suffering that leads to changes in the brain and gray matter shrinkage. So nobody knows the answer. Here's the thing, though. Physically, there doesn't appear to be any inflammatory damage. There may be nerve changes, but overall, there isn't. So I think one thing you can say is, okay, it's okay to exercise within the limits of what you're able to do and under guidance. It's okay if you have a level of pain, if you're able to work with it and modulate it. It's okay. You're not going to necessarily injure yourself. It's important, again, with the guidance of a physician, to have this level of understanding of the physical and mental nature of the disease.
Danielle Heineberg, who's hot, by the way, what's up, girl, says, why do chronic pain warriors love wine? Why do they love wine so much, Z?
I'm not sure all of them do, but I, as a chronic mental pain warrior, love my wine. And you said you had chronic pain, Tom Heineberg. I have chronic angst. Yeah. It's a very specific type of chronic pain. Actually, all joking aside, that's why I started meditating when I moved to Vegas, because I was so wound up and so type A and so worried about the future and regretting of the past that I found that I just needed something, anything, and drugs weren't cutting it. I tried those when I was younger. So ended up doing meditation, and it really did transform my general level of equanimity. I was at a talk recently, and I met a rheumatologist there who was amazing, and she had told me something that actually stuck with me. She said, I watch your show religiously, and I'm really busy. I see a lot of patients. And actually, she probably sees a ton of fibromyalgia. She also sees kids. And she said, it's crazy how you can talk about something and you can be passionate about it, but you can see both sides and you're generally calm about it, and you come at this thing and you go, how do you do that? And I said, you know, I wasn't like that. Like, that took 5 years of like strict meditative practice to be able to step back and give a little space between your shitty first draft and the subsequent thinking about something and articulation of something. And it's not easy. And yes, Mini Trump.
Question. So I got two really good comments. Silver wants to know, how overdiagnosed do you think fibromyalgia is? Is the medical community just using it as a wastebasket diagnosis? And then Gina says, honest question, do you think there's a link between the diet we typically eat with all the processed food and inflammation? Because I know that my symptoms are somewhat better when I cut out the refined carbs and eat more protein. Mm. So there's this really hard science crowd that always wants to be like, calorie's a calorie, bro. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. Life's chemicals, which doesn't seem to be accurate, because we all know that when we eat shitty food, we pretty much feel bad and it affects our overall health.
Look, this is my elephant speaking. Okay, I changed my diet radically too when I came to Las Vegas, and I've never felt physically better in my life, and I'm as old as I've ever been or ever, you know, have been, because that's how humans are. They're always as old as you've ever been. And part of it, I think, is a placebo effect, but part of it is, you know, everybody is different. That's why this vegan thing of just eat vegetables may not work for Tom Heineberg. It certainly doesn't work for me. Or the keto guy's thing of just eat, you know, high fat, low carb doesn't work for everybody. Some people feel like shit. So find the diet that absolutely works for you. Now, the other question of wastebasket diagnosis of fibromyalgia, that's a medical way of saying, aren't we just overdiagnosing this shit and people need to suck it up? It's hard to say, right? Because you have to look at the patient in front of you. If they have the specific trigger points, the history, all the other stuff, then they probably have fibromyalgia. If they're asking for narcotics and they have vague symptoms and yada, 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 and someone just gave them a diagnosis of fibro and they latched onto it, and now they're using it to continue a pattern of emotional pain treatment with narcotic medications and constant doctor visits, then that's a different subject. And it takes a lot of insight and awareness to be able to tease those out. And that's one of the big problems right now.
Tracy says, best way to start meditation at home. Watch me shed the viewers right here.
Yeah, they're all going to go away.
No, for real. Put away Trump. Take us all through a meditation, the audience right now. I'll do it with you.
You gonna do it with me?
Yeah, you're a good meditator. You're a lot better than I am.
You want me to look at this camera?
Take everybody through a meditation right now, this camera.
I'm gonna take you through a meditation, and I've never done this before. So I'm not a great meditation teacher because I'm still learning myself, but I'm gonna take you through the simplest possible meditation that will get you started. The idea with meditation, the simplest thing is you first just prepare for it by finding a quiet place that's comfortable for you. Sit in whatever position is comfortable for you. Usually it's upright, legs crossed, legs could be down, hands comfortable, head slightly down, often helps people relax. Make sure your muscles are relaxed. And the whole purpose is to look inward for a second and observe your mind. And it's more than a second, obviously, but as you get good at it, you get better at focusing your attention on a particular object of meditation, whether it's the breath or the body sensations, whatever it is, while remaining peripherally aware that you're aware of everything around you. So the simplest thing would be close your eyes, take a couple of deep breaths just to clear and settle yourself right in the present moment where you are. So just and you'll feel sensations in your hands and some pressure in your butt, and you're gonna feel some pressure behind your eyes. But I want you to keep coming back to the sensation that you're breathing. And it could just be the sensation of cool at the tip of your nose or on your tongue.
But Z, what if we're dead?
If you're dead, you ain't gonna feel shit. And you fucked up my meditation, and for that, Mini Trump, who the fuck are we kidding, Tom Heineberg? We're never gonna get through a meditation. Jesus, with you assholes here. I hate you guys so much. Yes, Mini Trump.
Tom fell over.
Did he break my $600 microphone?
Nah, it's still good,
it's
Z.
It's still good.
I'm down C-Pack. Here on the floor now.
CPAC, notice the equanimity with which I address the situation. Am I throwing Tad? Maybe. Maybe after the show. But it ain't a thing. Tad don't give a fuck. And neither do I. CPAC, for everybody suffering out there with fibromyalgia, we invite you to tune into our video tomorrow where we watch Lady Gaga's interview, with her documentary, and we respond. Hit share, hit like. This is a tribe teach. If we could give you CEUs and CMEs, we still wouldn't because it's a pain in the ass to prepare. But we hope you learned something, and we hope your comments enlighten others, because a lot of the reason you guys leave comments is so others can learn from your comments. I see them too, but it's very important that the rest of the ZPAC, that we learn from each other. So thank you to everyone with fibromyalgia who's commented and who can teach us about the condition. And to everybody who's just trying to get narcotics, screw you people. I'm going home. We out.
I'll make Z do a real meditation to make up for Logan's retardedness.
Trump!
Go. Oh, Trump, I love you, baby.